Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is brought to you by GoToMyPC. Oh, the holidays. You know, you think about it for a second. You have parties and shopping, time with families and friends. But for some of us, holidays don't mean that business just stops, right? I mean, you could be traveling during the holidays or, you know, maybe you need some time off and you need to still stay connected to your work. I plan on using GoToMyPC to access my home computer, my business. You know, when I'm visiting the in-laws, sneak aside and kind of check things out. I can access any file or program. I don't need to hold my laptop with me or copy important data and documents to a flash drive, because GoToMyPC gives me peace of mind because I can really just access anything on my computer from anywhere, which is great. So the nice thing for the holidays is that GoToMyPC can get, you can get them and they're giving you a free 30-day trial. Just for our listeners, you can try it, GoToMyPC, free for 30 days. That's a month. Entire month, 30 days of unlimited remote access for free. And for this special offer, you know where to go, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a 30-day free trial. And of course, we want to make sure to take care of our sponsors. GoToMyPC, great sponsor of this show. And check them out. I think you'll enjoy it very much. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host. Thank you for being my guest today. It's episode number 138, and it is the end of the year here. We're in December already. It's been quite an amazing year. It's been a quite amazing week. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I have just a great, great guest coming on board today. His name is Leo Laporte. You know him well. He is a technology guru, a podcaster extraordinaire, and I really am going to talk about some things that have been on my mind for a while. We'll talk about things, I don't know, let's see, probably touch on, I know I want to know about the Nook and the Kindle and the competition there, some of the phone systems that are out there, iPhone, Android, some of the newest processors from Intel and how we can maybe profit from those, we'll talk about. I'll also put some of the stocks that are related to the discussion today on the blog, which is thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just click on show notes. With that in mind, I wanted to cover a couple things for you. You know, we have a new little thing that we did. We have the top posts of the week that if you go on the weekend or towards Monday, we kind of review all the most visited and most watched, looked at posts from the disciplinedinvestor.com. And we do a lot of work in terms of economics and looking at individual stocks and ETFs, things like that. And that's on there. And I think that you'll enjoy that. One of the things we did this week, we did a couple of polls. We talked about, one of the biggest things was all about Bernanke. He's up for reappointment, and you know that. And if you don't know that, the Federal Reserve Chief Bernanke has been appointed, but he has to be confirmed by Congress. And he was absolutely grilled by a couple of different senators this week. We put one of the videos up on the website. It's pretty shocking. But one of the things we did was we had a poll, and we said, you know, simply, should Bernanke be renominated? And overwhelmingly, I don't know if you would think of this, think of what your answer would be, but overwhelmingly, it was 83% no way, get rid of him. I was pretty shocked about that. You know, considering that he obviously has a pretty tough job, and we can probably debate what, if any, benefit he had or if he hurt the situation, whether before, during, or after the entire meltdown. But I was pretty amazed at that answer. Talked about natural gas this week. You know, natural gas has been falling again. Inventories are up substantially. We've talked about this, I think it was probably about 10 episodes ago, about how do you play natural gas. There's only really one or two viable ways. And if you want to play directly into natural gas, you have to go right into the futures market. But a lot of people like to use UNG, and that's the ETF, which is the symbol UNG, which is used for buying of natural gas. But you know what? This week it hit an all-time historic low. And that's because of the contango problem inside of there. We talked about this. It's a very difficult thing to own this. It's actually owned by a tremendous amount of people. It's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, ETFs out there. And everybody's trying to play the natural gas situation because it's, you know, quite a contrarian play right now. We see oil going up, but natural gas is, but yet at the same time, not as much. What is really interesting to see is that there is this divergence between natural gas and UNG, and you really need to look at that because it's a very tough thing to invest in that fund. But probably the most important news item of the week was non-farm payrolls, right? We saw 11,000 on Friday, 11,000 jobs lost on the non-farm basis, which was shocking at best. I mean, who would have thought, not the analysts, not the economists, because they were estimating, what, 125,000 with a 10.2% unemployment rate? And we saw 11,000. That's a big difference. And we saw a 10% unemployment rate. Now, we're talking about analysts being way off. So what you would expect to happen is markets would just fly up to the ceiling, which they did on the open. They gapped up on Friday, blew out all sorts of stops for many of the places that we have seen. So one of them is the closing high from 2009 at right at the S&P 1110.63. There's another big number, which is 1120, that a lot of people are looking at, which is the Fibonacci retracement from the low, and that's a 50% level. But that was getting close, but it didn't get there. And then all of a sudden, along with this, the dollar started to drive up really, really hard. Why? Well, if we're recovering here, and if it is a real recovery, then the Fed is not going to hold interest rates as low. At least this is the thinking. The dollar was up about 2.75%, 2.75% on Friday versus the yen, and it was up about 1.5% against the euro. Gold dove, which was really interesting. It took back all the gains for the week, about 4.5% or so for the week. And at the top of the market, we saw that the NASDAQ was up 2.5%, the S&P was up 1.6%, and then all of a sudden, within a half hour, when the dollar started driving up and there was real concern about what that was going to do and that carry trade was starting to come off, the markets just plummeted. Within a half hour, the NASDAQ lost over all of its gains and then it lost even more money. It was down about 2.2% within a half hour from the top. Now, it was down only a little bit, actually. The S&P and the Dow both went negative and they both lost about 1.5%. At the end of the week, it was quite a sight to see that they were only slightly higher than the week before. It's good that they're higher, but don't, you know, it was not amazing like it should have been. But that is because we're in this dichotomy right now. One of the things we're looking at as investors is, you know, how do you work with this market? You know, how do you get involved in a situation where, you know, you buy the news and all of a sudden the opposite seems to happen? That happened with the stock this week. Cubis Pharmaceuticals, one of the stocks that we own, it came out with an announcement that one of its drugs, this is really fascinating, one of its drugs did a very poor job. Not only that, it actually had a higher death rate and death incident rate than was tolerable. They canceled any further trials on the drug, and wouldn't you know what happened? The stock went up like 8%. No kidding. Stock went up 8%. When we saw the news, we said, oh no, you know, we have a position there. We said, oh my gosh, you know, that's not a really good number. We have to look a little further. And before we could even do anything, the stock started trailing up on it or moving up on us. That was great because we're long the position. But one of the things that's happening here is that the news is not always wrapped correctly and presented correctly. And you have to kind of look at that and see what's going on in terms of, you know, the stock action right now. What else do we see this week that's kind of interesting before we get to Leo? Very mixed numbers on the economics. Manufacturing and the ISM were very lukewarm at best. Retail came out this week 75% missed. That was kind of ugly. We saw President Obama speak on Tuesday and now moving another 30,000 troops into Afghanistan with a $40-plus billion annual fee on that. That's going to be a little bit kind of, we'll see how that plays out. The census is hiring. Did you see this story? The census is hiring about 1 million people. We figure that'll cost the U.S. about $450 million per month with this new hiring. They're paying people I guess it's the range of $10 to $20 per hour to, you know, do the census and walk around and check it out and work in the offices and et cetera. And this is going to be good, actually, for hiring. It's only a part-time situation, and it's not going to solve all the long-term problems when it comes to hiring. Government hiring never does, and particularly the census. But it could have come at a better time, if you really think about it. I mean, the census right now, with all the job losses, 1 million people back to work, at least on a part-time basis, or getting second jobs to pay for what they need to, whatever it is, that is a great thing and good for the economy. But on the other hand, we saw some things that were very, very odd. Did you see that story about Dubai? Did you watch that whole what went on there? I mean, Dubai basically came out with a statement that about $50 billion, this is the initial statement, $50 billion of their debt from Dubai World is going to have to be looked at and possibly renegotiated, and possibly they may be in default. Well, that drove the international markets berserk last week. We saw that. And we talked about this just a little bit, but one of the things that I found really interesting was how short it lasts. We came in Monday and Tuesday, and the number went from $50 billion to about $26 billion that they were going to restructure. Okay, that's better. No question about that. And that's what investors are really looking for these days, right? They're looking for, you know, how they can see things that are better than expectations or worse than expectations, because it's all based on expectations. So now there was a bit of relief. There was a bit of a relief rally because markets really tailed off last week on that, and especially in that shortened week. So that was kind of interesting. And on the heels of that, we saw that the Vietnam devalued their dong. They really had their currency, and they really drove things down because their inflation rate is just out of control. And North Korea did a similar thing when they devalued their currency. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you saw videos of this, but they saw people in the streets burning the old money. So I don't know. I mean, the world is kind of spinning around and around like it always has on its axis, but it just seems like for a little while, things are kind of a little bit off kilter when we're seeing these kind of things. And probably one of the weirdest things was, you know, did you see Microsoft was finally over 30 and stayed over 30 for most of the week? That was kind of interesting. That's been creeping up ever so slowly. And hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk with Leo about Microsoft Windows 7 and see what he thinks about that. And other than that, there was kind of a mixed sentiment out there. Some of the numbers came in positive from many retailers, but negative from consumers. But the proof will be in the pudding when we see really what the output was, even though we saw I guess there was no gain, or maybe just an ever so slight gain on Black Friday, even though they had a tremendous amount of deals. Walmart had discounted and slashed prices, so did Sears. But Amazon did much better. And so did some of the online retailers, which was good news. But, you know, we thought the week was very, you know, it was a little bit difficult to really gauge what was happening after we saw those dramatic ups and downs and some leaks from the White House. But nonetheless, hopefully you were able to weather through it and get through the week. And I think that as we talked about on some of our podcasts recently, this excess volatility is something to be very concerned about. And if we are going to enter into I guess we can call it a W shape or maybe a double dip in the second half, somewhere in the second half of 2010. Now's the time to be looking very carefully at your portfolios. And if you want, by the way, you can check out our 14-minute video, or I guess we'll call it a virtual tour of the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. Great time for the end of year to take a look at that and see if there's something that you want to, you know, take a look at how we do things. We're very transparent. We have that private blog, which we put a post up, what we write up on Fridays on the Disciplined Investor. If you're kind of curious what we're talking about with our clients, there's a sneak peek of that. So we'll put that link in the show notes. But if you want to check it out, just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. On the blog, there is a link on the show notes. There'll be a link. And just check it out and see if you like what we're talking about. And if you want us to manage money, that's what we're here for. And when we get back, we're going to be talking with Leo Laporte from TWIT this week in tech and his whole empire of podcasts. So it's going to be a lot of fun talking tech with Leo on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll be right back. We're back from the break, that little musical interlude. And you know what? As I promised, we have the one, the only Leo Laporte here. Leo, how are you?
Hey, Andrew. Great. How are you?
I am great. Listen, we're going to talk about tech, and I know no other better individual to talk to than you about all this tech, because you know what? I know there's pretty much anything I could talk about in tech, and you'll have the answer to.
Yeah, before we started, you said, let me set you up. And I said, no, surprise me.
Exactly.
I'm ready.
You're ready. All right. So let's talk about, I have so many things to talk about. You know, let me start with something that's a small item, and it was annoying. I was in the CompUSA this week, and I had to try the new NVIDIA 3D glasses. Have you seen these yet?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I'm a bad guy to ask. I'll tell you a couple of things. First of all, I should recuse myself on all 3D issues because I only use one eye at a time, and all of these 3D technologies require binocular vision, which most normal humans have. I'm just super normal. So I can't see 3D. You know, I went to Cap Neo at Disneyland, and it looked like it was just fuzzy. So you know, I mean, I can if I really work at it. So I know what the experience is. I know what it feels like to have a hand reaching out from the screen. Now, let me tell you my opinion. Knowing that, you could take it with a grain of salt. I think 3D is a gimmick.
Yeah.
It stuns me that Hollywood is so hugely behind this. You know, Hollywood's already committed basically to turning movie theaters into 3D. This is a technology they think is going to get people back into the theaters, and I just disagree. I think it detracts from story. I don't think it really enhances the movie. It doesn't make it more realistic. Do you think it makes it more realistic?
I was watching the video screen. It was actually a widescreen flat panel, and I watched all the different trailers and what was, and then I took the glasses off, and I was like nauseous. Seriously.
Yeah, well, that's another problem. It does. You don't want a technology that's going to make its users nauseous. Now, those NVIDIA glasses are really intended for gamers.
Right.
And there are a few 3D games, and that I think actually does make sense.
But the problem is that you have to do that thing where you bring your eyes together versus the red and green glasses that they just kind of a little bit popped out here and popped out there. Right. So you have to kind of concentrate and bring it together. And your eyes really, and it's not just staring at one thing. Now you're looking all over the screen. So every once in a while, as you're not concentrating like you should, all of a sudden your eyes come apart because you almost have to go cross-eyed.
Well, see, this is good for me to know because I had no idea. So you're saying it takes work for even you, a normally binocular virgin human.
Yep.
Then that's a bad idea.
And by the way, if anybody's seen a picture of Leo, he is the one-eyed individual.
I'm a Cyclops, actually. We Cyclops just don't appreciate
it. Yeah, no, I understand. I
think it's a gimmick. I think, you know, the point of gaming is to get it more immersive. And so 3D gaming, you know, if it makes it more immersive, fine. I think that eventually gaming will be highly immersive, but I don't think it's going to be with 3D technologies. I think it's going to be maybe getting a pipeline right into the cerebral cortex.
Ah, now that sounds like
may be a few years off.
Right, exactly. So, listen.
I'm hoping they have it by the time I'm in the nursing home because I plan to lie in bed and have Paris piped into my cerebral cortex.
Nice. Yeah. So, let's talk about cloud computing. Intel comes out with its new chip, or talked about this week, about its 48 core. What is that?
Well, first of all, you understand it's a concept chip. They're making it. Intel is making a small run of under 100 chips to give to scientists, developers, and see what they can do with it. I think it's more from Intel's point of view, it's more a way of saying, look at what we can do than anything else. It's interesting what's happened to Intel's business. You know, I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, they were talking about 4 gigahertz chips and beyond, mm-hmm. 5 gigahertz, 6 gigahertz. And what happened is they hit a wall. They realized we can't make 4 gigahertz chips. They get too hot. There are all sorts of issues. So they backed off on the higher clock speeds. You notice we're now still at 1 and 2 gigahertz, you know, in some cases 3. And they've added more cores. They've added dual cores. The latest chip that Intel is going to ship in the first quarter of 2010 is kind of mind-bogglingly is going to have, I think, what is it? It's 8 cores in each chip. So if you bought a two-chip system, as many high-end gamers do, you'd have 16 cores, and then Hyper-Threaded gives you 32 processes. So we're really not that far off from a computer you'll be able to buy in a few months. Right. Who benefits from this? Well, not many people, because you have to have software that's going to use this. And I think that's why Intel is releasing this 48-core chip to say, okay, developers, here's your chance. Remember that these 48 cores are Atom-style cores. They're low power cores, both in energy usage and in computational ability. Of course, when you put 48 of anything together, you get some real power. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. We're moving ahead, and this is the future, is multi-core processors.
I mean, the question, of course, comes in, you know, this is kind of a silly and naive point, but, you know, what are they going to do with all this power? It almost seems to me that, you know, with my high-end Macs or my high-end Windows machines, what else do you need? It seems like it's fast enough. I click, it does what I want it to do.
I'm kind of with you. I once asked, foolishly as it turned out, the president of Intel. I was interviewing him on Tech TV, and I said, why would anyone need a 2 gigahertz chip? And he said, Leo, only middle-aged reporters like you ever ask me that question. Ask a college kid what he'd need with 2 gigahertz.
Right.
But I think my point still stands, which is we've got processors that are more than powerful enough to do 90% of what we do, which is surf the internet, maybe watch video on the internet, and listen, you know, send and receive email. An Atom processor, which is a really slow processor, is fast enough to do that. So when Craig Barrett tells me, you know, you're old and in the way, I mean, I have to take it with a grain of salt. Intel wants to sell chips. The only way to sell chips is to make the old chips seem obsolete. But as is often the case, hardware is ahead of software. We don't yet need these more powerful chips. We've been on a power curve for a long time because we went to GUIs. We went to graphical operating systems. We went to Windows and Macintosh. And they needed more horsepower than the chips of those eras, you know, 10, 15 years ago had. So we had to ramp up. But the hardware has now caught up with graphical operating systems. It's more power than you need. The only people who want more power are gamers for the most part.
Right.
On the other hand, I can see new user interfaces on the horizon that perhaps could take advantage. For instance, I was told by a speech scientist that we know how to do perfect speech recognition. We just need more horsepower. So it is possible that, you know, your next computer will be like HAL from 2001. You'll talk to it and it will understand you.
I keep on seeing all this happening, and I keep on thinking Terminator Rise of the Machines. You know?
We're building Skynet right now.
Right, exactly. So yeah. So that dovetails into Microsoft. Now, Windows 7 came out. I had an early copy of it, and when I was playing with it, I said, this is Vista. What's the difference?
Well, it is Vista.
It's Vista. It's a Vista chassis it's built on. And I don't know. I mean, there's some good things. It definitely is a lighter running system than Vista. It definitely has a few little I mean, is this compelling enough for people to change? I haven't changed. I run Vista, and I run it fine.
Well, if you're happy with Vista, probably not. But you're in the minority, remember, Andrew. Most people hated Vista. Microsoft had a real problem getting people to adopt Vista, and in fact, most Windows users are still using XP.
Which is
for
amazing.
Them, it's a definite must-have upgrade. I think if you're using a netbook, you really can't run Vista on a netbook. You need Windows 7. It's very light. It's very fast. I like Windows 7. You know who Windows 7 really appeals to, Andrew? Mac users. Because it's about as close to a Macintosh as you can get.
Exactly.
And so I think that what we're seeing is kind of a merging of operating systems at this point. There's not much difference between Windows and a Mac. I like Windows 7 a lot. Maybe that's because I use Macs so often. I think it's a great operating system. And I am telling everybody that they should upgrade to Windows 7.
One of the things that I talked to my friends at Microsoft. I have a few tech guys over there that I know very well. And I said, there is something missing that is just so simple. I do not understand why you don't have this, which is a multi-clip clipboard. You can't put add-ons onto a Windows machine, generally speaking. You could do it
in
Firefox.
Want to if you can avoid it.
Right.
I agree. It should be in the operating system.
But you have I use a PT pasteboard for that is like I can't work without that.
No, I agree with you. You know, there's always a balance between making it too complex for, you know, grandma and making it powerful enough for people like you, the power users.
Right.
And I think it's a reasonable thing for Microsoft to say we're going to provide a kind of standard set of capabilities. Apple does the same thing, by the way. They don't have a multi-clip clipboard either. We're going to provide kind of a basic look at. My wife still doesn't understand cut, copy, and paste. So we're still working with a lot of people who this is new, and they don't. Not only do they not need a multi-clip clipboard, they're still trying to understand a single clip clipboard.
Right.
But good news for people like us, there's plenty of easy, free add-ons we can install.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's always this decision. Well, how much do we pack into the operating system? And you may not agree with it, but they have to make this decision. And I think that they probably err on the side of simplicity, rightly so.
Right. Let's talk about two of the hot topics right now. First of all, retailers. Amazing quarter and an amazing divergence of what's going on right now that during the Black Friday and the holiday season. So far, we saw that general retailers were only about 5% on sales from last year, which isn't really that good because last year was God awful.
It was awful.
Awful.
Yeah.
But we saw that retailers, the internet-based, if you will, or cyber retailers, were up about 16%.
Cyber Monday, baby.
Which
it was big.
Yeah, it was big.
$877 million. They're going to hit $1 billion next year online in one day. And the funny thing is, you know, the press makes this big deal about Cyber Monday. In fact, even e-tailers now are making this big deal because, hey, they want the business. Mm-hmm. But it's not even the biggest online shopping day of the year. It's the third biggest online shopping day of the year.
There's some weird date in December, right?
Yeah, December. I think December 9th.
Which is probably the last day that you can get something delivered before Christmas.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is. Yeah. I was wondering. You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
But the good news is people are buying online. They finally figured it out. Amazon, I don't know what Amazon's. You're better than I on stocks. I would imagine Amazon is a hot product, hot property right now.
Let's just say through the roof.
They're killing it.
Yep. Well, then, you know what the big thing they did? They bought the shoe company. I know this sounds silly. I know this sounds kind of silly. They paid upwards of $1 billion of it, but shoe companies are hot. I mean, hot. You know, the Shoe Buy. I buy my shoes from Shoe Buy. You can get Zappos or whoever out there. Get them delivered to you for free. You don't like them, you send them back for free. So I get like four or five different sneakers in, and I try them on. I send the rest back. But those companies and some of the other shoe companies are remarkably strong. It seems that people in a recession are not cutting back on shoes.
Isn't that funny? It seems like the last thing you'd want to buy online. The last thing you need to try on.
It's women. It's women.
Well, I buy all my shoes. Once you figure out the size.
Yeah. You push the button.
I buy all my shoes online.
Yeah.
At Zappos, by the way. I think Amazon's strategy is to keep you on Amazon's site. They don't want you buying anything anywhere else. They've succeeded very well with the Amazon
marketplace. It's so easy.
Right. The Amazon marketplace isn't even stuff they're selling.
Right.
It's just merchants who want to use the Amazon interface. So what Amazon has become is not a traditional retailer. They're not Macy's anymore. They're the mall.
Right.
They're where you go to buy everything. And the more you could stay in the Amazon universe, the more money they make. So, of course, they're going to own a shoe retailer. I expect they'll own something in every category at some point.
Yeah. Did I tell you I ran into Jeff Bezos?
No.
I was over
there. Did you make him laugh? Because I hear
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. It is quite unique.
I've never met Jeff, but I think he is absolutely
brilliant.
I think we'll look back and say, you know, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos.
Amazing.
This guy knows what he's up to.
Nice guy, too. I spent some time with him. I was over at CNBC, and he was interested in Kindle. And I walked up to him and said, hey, you know what? You didn't return my email. He said, when did you send it? I said, about a year ago. He says, I'm getting to it. It's coming up, you know?
Good exchange.
So he was very nice. And his little entourage they brought, very nice. So let's talk about the Kindle. Let's talk about the Nook, the Sony. There's the new one. There's a new reader out, a strange reader out that's very expensive that does text-to-speech because it's more of a product for visually impaired. But the Kindle... Nook, Sony, who else is there? There's a new one from I think Dell is thinking about putting one out. Kindle's great.
Well, you know what? You know why everybody's trying to get these out of the door now is because everybody's looking over their shoulder at Apple, waiting for what Apple does. Sometime in 2010, and the rumors vary everywhere from January to December, Apple's going to release a slate, an iPad, a touch device, and the fear among all these companies is Apple's touch device will also have book reading. And if it does, you know, you watch out. Look what Apple did to the music industry.
Yeah.
Look what they're doing to television and movies. People are very afraid that Apple, which is turning into a online retail juggernaut, might well kind of own, you know, they own the online content space. And if they decide to do books, stand back. So I could see why all of these companies are really worried. You know, Amazon's Kindle, I've had all the Kindles and I love them, and I use one every single day. But let's face it, it's a crappy device.
Yeah, the new one, by the way, I looked at the new one compared to the old one, because I had the old one. I gave that to my mother. She wanted that for her birthday, whatever. So, And then I checked out the new one. Those little buttons are hard to deal with.
The buttons are bad. The device, you know, design is bad. It's better, but still not good. The screen, not good.
Yeah.
It's okay. So this is really an okay device. You know, no one is releasing sales information, so we don't know if, you know, 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people have bought it. We just don't know. It looks like Amazon's selling these pretty darn well, but they're not telling anybody what the numbers are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I still am a little skeptical on this category, and I think Apple could march in on this category by doing something that's color, that's something that's that has a better UI. They know how to do UI, so I think this is actually, believe it or not, Apple's game to lose.
Yeah, and then the only problem, though, is that if you say color and things of that nature, then you got to get back to the publishers. What are they going to do with that? Right now, they're all geared up for example. And listen, my book is on Kindle. I wouldn't even know how to get it on Nook. I mean, you know, what do you do about that? They say they have 780,000 books available for the Nook through Barnes & Noble, but yet, how did they do that? Did they get, you know, if Amazon doesn't have it on the Kindle, how does Barnes & Noble have it all of a sudden?
Some of those numbers are deceiving because a lot of what Barnes & Noble is offering is public domain stuff scanned in by Google.
Which is a big controversy about that.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, if you want the stuff you find in a bookstore, if you want bestsellers, you're going to buy a Kindle.
Right.
the Kindle has wireless. I think that's really important. You don't have to hook it up to a computer. That knocks Sony out of the ballpark. We still haven't seen the Nook. It doesn't come out until after Christmas. Mm-hmm. Whoops. So I think the jury's still out on whether either of these are going to overtake the Kindle. I think the Kindle's right now the one to beat. But I really think that a lot of people get this home and they go, well, it's okay, but the screen's kind of gray. It's not very contrasting. Yeah. And I'll tell you why you want color. One of the big markets for this stuff is textbooks. But have you ever looked at a bar chart in black and white?
No, horrible.
It
horrible.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, this could
you
be really neat for the schools.
You can't do the stock stuff you do without color.
This could be
so
great.
I think if you're going to compete and you're going to do textbooks and you're going to – a lot of books are in color these days – I think you've got to have a color display. Then you got battery life issues. That's why they use these e-ink displays. They're very, you know,
very good,
efficient with batteries. But if you're going to charge it up every day anyway because it's a tablet and you're using it to surf the net as well, so big deal.
I thought that, you know, talking about the Apple issue and back to, you know, is Apple the, you know, they have control of so much right now when it comes to music and entertainment and all that. And what I found really interesting was a couple of weeks back, did you see the AdMob buy?
Yeah, see, isn't that interesting?
That was really interesting. I mean,
for a lot of money too.
A lot of money. I mean, that can't be a company that had been doing that for very long because the platform wasn't there for very long.
They were in business for I think 6 or 7 months. I mean, talk about a big score.
Fabulous.
I'd like to start a company that has a payday of several hundred million dollars in 6 months.
Tell everybody what they do. Tell everybody what they do.
If you've used an iPhone, you've seen AdMob ads. They do online advertising, mobile advertising. On portable devices. So if you use a Android phone, or which is probably why Google was interested, mm-hmm. or you use an iPhone, and you're using software that is either free or low cost, CNN, for instance, offers a pretty nice news program, and it pops up ads from AdMob. So it's kind of like, you know, Overture or Google itself, but it's specifically for mobile advertising. So Google, you know, I think the reason Google picks it up is why not? We want to own this. We want to own this.
But Apple was in discussion with them 2 weeks prior, which is really kind of the interesting thing.
But Apple's business is not advertising.
No, clearly. There's no question. It probably was a better fit for them. But it's interesting that Apple was trying to get in on that territory.
Apple couldn't spend the kind of money that Google could spend.
Yeah, that was a lot of money.
I mean, $750 million? Come on. This is a seven-month-old company?
Yeah.
Good Lord. Everybody's looking at Google, saying this is the next giant, this is the next Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Even Apple looks at Google saying, what do we do? Now, Microsoft, it's sad because Microsoft can't make a move without saying, what would Google do? I mean, Microsoft lives in the shadow of Google and for some reason cannot operate on its own without copying Google. It's really kind of pathetic, to be honest with you. Yeah. Microsoft's like the, you know, the handsome high school star, you know, who was a captain of the football team, and then you see him 10 years later and he's kind of a drunk in the side alley. It's like, guys, get up, get on your feet. What the hell are you doing?
Right. Yeah.
So Apple, I think Apple, we don't know how serious Apple was. Apple is not in the ad business. It just didn't make sense. And I think that must be what they decided.
I would agree. I mean, the Google, it was a great fit for Google. It was interesting that there was that little thing going on that, again, the additional little tug and, you know, pull and tug between Apple and Google that has kind of developed lately. And it started with, of course, when there was a removal of one of the Google, Eric, who was the guy?
Eric Schmidt.
Yeah, he was asked to leave, or he left the board of directors of Apple. Of course, there was a conflict of interest.
They had
right?
to be. They were in competition with each other.
Yeah, and then they have the situation.
Apple's credit, to Steve Jobs' credit, he may be aware of Google, but he doesn't base his decisions on what Google's up to. Thank goodness, right?
Well, but what's happening now? That dovetails right into the iPhone. We got the iPhone. We got the Pre. We got the Android. I think the stupidest phone device thing that I ever heard in my life entering into this particularly very competitive environment. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
The Garmin phone.
Yeah.
What were they thinking?
Garmin and Dell. Well, Dell's doing a phone too.
Well, Garmin's pretty silly.
Why would you want to get in this business? Garmin's, you know what Garmin's problem is?
No,
in fact, it's a problem all the GPSs have. It's why you can buy a GPS for Christmas that's $100, that's a 4.3-inch screen. They're terrified that all the phones are going to have turn-by-turn. In fact, all the Android phones do have turn-by-turn.
They should be. They should be nervous about that.
And it puts them out of business.
Right.
And not to mention the fact that Google is doing its own mapping. So NavTech and Telemap.
Telemap. Yeah, I think it's Telemap.
NavTech and these other guys who have made lots of money licensing their maps to Garmin and Magellan. You know, Nokia bought one for $1.7 billion. The other was sold to, was it Ericsson, for another huge billion dollars.
The MapQuest, all them,
These guys are going to suddenly be out of business because Google has all the same data, has turn by turn, and is giving it away.
Yeah, no, but all I'm saying is the Garmin, it just seems to be that they're pouring money down a hole to get themselves out of business even faster.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
You know,
I'm guessing that's not a buy signal.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's interesting that the prices came down. They're actually selling some. Everybody's all excited with cash for clunkers that, you know, all of a sudden people are buying cars and they're going to get Garmin in there. But I'm thinking, boy, you know what? There's just enough going around. Who do you think I was listening to, was it a This Week in Mac, I think, or Mac Break Weekly. And I think you were talking about the Android versus the iPhone, and people were saying, Android is kind of there, but not there. It's very clunky.
The Droid, the Verizon Droid. Yeah, the Droid. I'm very impressed with the Droid. Here's what I see in the Droid. You see this all the time, and anybody who's been doing this as long as I have, almost 30 years now, every once in a while, a product comes along that's not there, but is kind of, okay, this is the beginning. Where you say, okay, that's going to change everything. When Netscape came along, okay, it's going to change everything. When Microsoft released IE3, I said, and pissed off Mark Andreessen when I did it, over for Netscape. Every once in a while, I see a product come along that's going to change the landscape. To me, Droid is a proof that Android, Google's operating system, is a winner, that there's going to be a very solid ecosystem of developers writing applications for it. That's critical. And it has every bit of the juice that the iPhone has in an open platform. Not necessarily that Droid's the best phone ever, or even that Android's going to beat iPhone, but that it is going to be a strong competitor. It's a player.
Yeah. Like,
that's the point.
Well, the open source, too. I mean, there's so many concerns about the Apple developer system and the process and, getting in and all that. And I mean, to their credit, they've made a lot of people very wealthy. Look at like a Zynga. I think that's how you pronounce
right.
it.
Right, Zynga.
Zynga.
Yeah.
Do you play Scramble, by the way?
No. You know what?
Oh,
I very famously, I got sucked into Farmville on Facebook. And about 100 hours later, I said, what the hell am I doing? This is meaningless. I'm harvesting virtual artichokes.
Yeah.
And I with shaking hands, I clicked on the delete button on that application. You're right. I mean, look, if you want a buy signal, companies like Zynga are, this kind of casual gaming. These guys now know how to be totally addictive.
Yep.
And they're getting the eyeballs. Facebook's giving them an amazing platform. Same thing on the iPhone, and I think Droid eventually as well. If I went out there looking for a company to acquire or a stock to buy, I'm looking at these good, powerful, interactive, casual gamers who have learned how to addict people. It's very addictive.
Yeah, and their revenues are, I think, $700 million already.
No one really knows.
They came out with something. They said that.
Oh, did they? They admitted it?
They said that. And there was a whole discussion about them. There was a whole article about them talking about the environment at their work. They have weekly parties that are beer parties. They have rooms there that have only games. You're not allowed to talk business. They have Xboxes and they have that. They have masseuses that come in. I put my application in, by the way. For a job.
I'm very interested because I'm a small business. I got 7 employees and really thinking about corporate culture. So we've got the Zappos books. You know, they put out a book every year. We've got the Amazon stuff and Jeff Bezos's, the teachings of Chairman Jeff and stuff. And we're really trying to understand the new corporate cultures. And I think it's really interesting how these technology companies are reinventing the corporation. You must know this, but Netflix, there's no vacation policy. You take what you need.
Right. I think that's the best. I do that in my company. I don't ask anybody. You know, listen, if it gets to be obnoxious, I'll say something. But I get to take off any time that I want. Nobody asks me.
Betsy. Yeah, but you're the boss.
So what? As soon as you
I have that policy for me, but am I going to do it for my employees?
But I think as soon as you get to a point that you say that you're better than anybody else, that you can do what you want, but they can't. They're individuals. They're people. They have to do their job, and they have to produce, and they have to provide, the required amount of things, just like I do. If I'm gonna go on vacation, I'm gonna make sure that I'm totally, everything's done before I go, or I'm gonna take it with me, or whatever. Well, if you have the same responsibility for your little area, and you have it for your area, I have it for my area, and as long as my work doesn't impinge on your situation, then all of a sudden, if I don't finish mine, I throw it on you, or vice versa. If you're an employee and if you don't finish your work, it's thrown on me. I mean, I don't have a problem as long as you get it done. I don't care if you really don't work, to be honest with you, and come into work, as long as all the things that we have to be done are done.
Well, you know what I just did, which is really crazy, and this is kind of along those lines of creating an interesting corporate culture. I decided I'm not going to take any money out of my company. I'm not going to take a paycheck from Twit. I'm going to let the listeners pay me.
Hmm.
So what I've announced, and I just did this at the beginning of the month, is that I won't take a salary,
mm-hmm.
but I will have a tip jar right. on the Twit site, and if you think Twit's worth something, you get to pay me. And every month I'll announce exactly how much money I'm making.
Wow.
Now, I admit that, look, I have a day job. I do a radio show, so I'm not going to starve. But
right.
most of my income has come from Twit up to now.
Right.
And I'm basically saying, okay, I'm not going to take any more money out. If we get too much money out of this, I mean, if it starts to be hundreds of thousands of dollars a month, I will donate some to charity and put the rest back into Twit so that we can develop the company even further. I'm not going to go crazy here. But I think don't you think every CEO's pay scale should be set by the owners of the company, the stockholders, and
yeah,
or the
absolutely.
Customers?
And not rigged.
By crazy executive
right.
Pay committees? These
right.
are crazy.
Yeah, no, it's all crazy. By the way, I also usually will buy lunch for everybody in the office.
Oh, shut up, Andrew. You're just showing off now.
I'm just saying that, you know, do you know why? Do you know why?
They won't leave the
they
office.
They don't leave. They don't leave the office.
No, we that's a kind of standard Silicon Valley thing. Google's famous for its cafeterias.
Right.
The food is great there. And, you know, we provide lunch for our employees. And we also, but I actually want them to get out of the office. So, but we also provide, you know, coffee drinks and all sorts of stuff. We're getting a refrigerator. We're going to stock
right.
it up. So absolutely, you got to treat employees well.
Yeah.
But I think just even more than that, it's interesting. The thing that's made Zappos what it is, the thing that made Amazon what it is its focus on customers.
Yep.
And I think ultimately that's really what makes these companies different.
I agree.
They're super serving their customers. And if you, to the extent that you can do that, I think that's the extent you can become a great company.
No, I totally agree. By the way, you mentioned Mark Andreessen a moment ago. And do you know he formed a new venture firm with this guy Horowitz? So it's Andreessen Horowitz is the name of the firm.
And not Andrew Horowitz.
Well, I don't know. I've gotten so many emails from people that are congratulating me. You can't imagine.
Yes.
Like, oh, that's fantastic.
Good news. Yeah. Good news. Well, it's interesting because Mark's track record post Netscape, he did Loud Cloud, which was kind of an interesting play. I don't know how successful it was. He's invested in Dig, which is also another interesting play, but I don't know how much money he's going to make out of it. You know, it's very hard to have a second act, isn't it?
It's very hard. I mean, they say that, you know, what is the saying? It's something, if you can make one major thing happen in your life, it's pretty much anybody could ever ask for. One major success.
I agree.
It's tough to be one of those serial entrepreneurs because, first of all, there's a lot of weight on your shoulders. And, you know, you do this and you go, and then if you're lucky enough, you could do a secondary issue that's really very amazing. And a lot of times it takes money, of course. And
hey, I have to correct myself, though. I was just checking. Loud Cloud, which he started, a web hosting, a services-based web hosting company, sold its business to EDS and was sold to Hewlett-Packard for $1.6 billion. So maybe he's a...
That was good. Oh, that was good. Yeah.
maybe good. He did all right.
Yeah, but these days, billions aren't worth what they used to be.
That's right.
Anyway,
he's investing in some very interesting stuff.
I hear you. So first of all, congratulate you. You and I are neck and neck and head to head in the podcast awards for the podcast People's Choice, which I know that you have a much larger audience, so if they were voting, you got that.
But everybody go vote for everybody go vote.
The voting's over. Voting's over. But
oh,
we'll
it's
see.
Over.
Yeah, we'll see you next week or the week after or something like that. I actually all three of my podcasts were in categories. I was pretty pleased about that. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean it really is more a measure of how popular you are and how much your audience cares about you than anything else.
Right,
so
we're
very grateful to be nominated. And you know, I try not to campaign too much, but some of my hosts really wanted to win. So I let you know, there's a couple of categories where I have two shows against each other.
Uh-oh.
So I said I'm not gonna decide, you know, in technology it's Security Now versus Floss Weekly. So I said, I'm not going to choose between two of my babies. You guys have to lobby on your own.
Right. And how many podcasts do you have now? You have like 20-something, right?
Yeah. Believe it or not, I have no idea. It's
That's tough.
I think it's around 15. I don't know. I think I do a dozen shows, and then we have additional shows. Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have to count them. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 podcasts right now.
Wow. That's
impressive. Oh, wait a minute. There's two. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. We just added two more. 17, 18.
Nice.
It'll be around 20 by the
it's a network. It's no longer Twit. It's the Twit network.
Well, it's a really interesting balancing act. I don't want to become like Revision 3 or Mevio especially, where it's kind of indistinct what exactly we do. I want people to know that it's a technology, a network for technology enthusiasts.
Right.
So I really want to keep our laser-like focus on that audience. We've branched out a little bit in the past. We did Roz Rose, which was covering a woman who was roaming across the Pacific. We did Munchcast, which is about geek junk food. And neither one did all that well. And I think I was, I've been spanked, and I think I understand that you've got to kind of stick to your knitting. So I do have one podcast that's my daughter's podcast that's about teen issues that's completely non-tech. But hey, it's my daughter. I get to do that.
I hear you. Leah Laporte, you are awesome. And I hope that next time I know I'm going to come visit you up in Petaluma.
Please do.
Spend a little time, because I heard your studio just got bigger and bigger and bigger and
it
more
is.
Intense.
In fact, we're, you know, one of the things we're saving our pennies for, because it's going to be pretty expensive, is the studio that you were in, which is, we're going to call Studio A, is going to be replaced by Studio B, which is a bigger studio, the larger room, the antechamber to the room that you were in, mm-hmm. So that we can have more stuff going on. We're going to redesign the set. And that's going to probably all happen in the spring or summer.
You need to grow another arm.
Yeah, well, I do. And those are my great employees, people like Colleen, who's an incredible engineer and designer, who's designing all this stuff for us, and Dane, who runs the programming. And I've got a great now, a COO, Lisa, who's just brilliant. Two of the best editors in the business, Eric and Tony. So we've grown quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's really exciting. I feel really good about the direction we're taking, and I feel very grateful to our audience. That's why I thought, I'm going to let them pay me.
Yeah,
why
that's
should
great.
I? Why, you know, let them decide how much I'm worth.
Now, let me ask you one thing in closing. So talking about podcasts for a minute, you know, one of the things that's what I've seen happen is that when we started way back when, I'm up to show 138 here. Okay.
Wow.
I figure that's like weekly, right? And, you know, we're usually in the top something or other of iTunes of our business segment and all that. And we don't have a lot of advertising going on. So it's word of mouth and people telling people and all that. And in the last, I don't know, 6 months, there has been a gigantic, you know, encroachment by the corporate world, by, you know, the big names, and it's kind of like really busy now with Wall Street in my area, Wall Street Journal. And, you know, they have five different shows and
my area too.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm very pleased that if you look at the Independents, for example, ours is like one of the only ones up there. But I'm wondering, what does that mean?
Well, it was inevitable that the people who have all the money and have all the marketing clout are going to kind of move in once we validated the segment. But to me, it validates us, too.
Yeah.
It means that we're in the right place at the right time. And I think a good independent podcaster can compete well. You know, it's hard for a big company like NBC, now owned by Comcast, to do good technology programming. They don't get it. They don't understand it. So I think because we've picked a niche that we understand better than anyone, we'll do fine. I'm not too worried. In fact, I'm encouraged. Having the NPRs and the CBSs of the world move in just means that we're in the right place.
Yeah,
and advertisers are going to see that. And we've lost some buys. You know, it broke my heart. We did Visa was interested in doing a buy a couple of years ago, and they said, but we really want to test podcasting, so we're going to do a 3-month buy with you and spend a lot of money, but we've got a lot of research behind it. And they did all the research, and they said, boy, we've never seen anything do so well. Podcasts clearly work. We got a 90% recognition, name recognition out of these ads. Thank you so much. And then they went off and bought NPR podcasts. So we're going to lose some buys to companies that are still kind of in the old mindset that you got to buy traditional media. That's fine. You know, I'm not complaining. We're doing financially. We're doing very well. In fact, our big problem is we're sold out. We can't sell any more ads. We don't have any room.
Well, that's one of the problems. I mean, we have some ads coming in on ours. We know ours is more of informational. We want to keep it light on the ads. I don't want to do it too much.
We only do one per half hour. I really want to limit it. Yeah.
Right. But the thing is, what I found really interesting is that the advertising area, when it comes to this, they're so interested in all the research they can get for it. Whereas I said, wait a minute, you advertise on television. You have no idea where that goes. It goes into midair. You advertise on radio. You don't know what happens after that. You put it on top of a taxi cab. You have no clue. You're getting, what's the difference?
I think that's a measure of the economy. I mean, people want to know what their ROI is going to be on their ad dollar.
Right.
So the good news about internet media compared to broadcast media is you can get that kind of very concrete information, not just through research, but through download numbers and stuff. And advertisers, I think from now on, are going to demand that. You know what? In the long run, Andrew, that's good for us. We can give them that kind of information.
Yeah, and speaking about Comcast and one more called Discovery that we like, the Discovery Channel, which have you noticed all the ads that are on TV these days?
That's good for us also.
That's really good for us, but it's also good for these companies. It's amazing to see the amount of ads, even in the economy being soft and all that, that the advertisers are really busting it out to get in there. And we like these companies from a standpoint of buying them for our investors. And they've done very well. We just sold out of Comcast, just to kind of be full disclosure. We bought it before the announcement. We made like 7% in a matter of 2 weeks.
Made a couple of weeks.
And that was that. And now there's going to be the antitrust issues that are going to go on forever and ever.
This is like AOL Time Warner,
This
you sold at the right time.
Yeah, just kind of move it in and out and be and Discovery Channel just looks really sharp. So anyway, we could talk for hours, you and I always enjoy it. One day when I become a little bit more technology savvy, I'm going to come back to TWIT, not talk business so much. But we'll talk soon. Leo, you are the best. I wish you a wonderful, wonderful holiday to you and your family. And I'm looking forward to seeing the studio. If you ever get down to muggy, hot, disgusting, foul-smelling, low-priced houses, Florida, we'll love to spend some time with you.
I love Florida. What the hell are you talking about?
I love Florida. No, Florida's great. Florida's great.
I'm jealous. You've got much nicer weather right now than we do.
It's absolutely. We will talk soon. Mr. Leo Laporte, you're the best. Everybody listen to TWIT and TWIT Live. Everything. Are you doing, by the way, everything on video now? Every show?
Yes. Every show we do on video. We haven't released all video versions of all shows. We will do that. It's a manpower issue, but we've got 5 shows out on video now, and we're going to have all of them on video probably in the next few months.
Well, we'll put links on the show notes of this at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I encourage you. It's some of the best stuff you'll ever hear. I'm addicted to his shows. Leo Laporte, you're the best.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right, bye-bye. Oh, Leo Laporte is a breath of fresh air. Nice to talk about technology, but what we're going to do is also wrap this up in On the show notes, I'm going to put all the different stocks that are related to the things that we talked about today. I thought that would be kind of neat. We can have the discussion about technology. So when we talk about like cloud computing and we talk about Intel's chip, hey, we could talk about Rackspace. So, for example, RAX is a symbol we talk about and that we like. And things like, when we talk about the Palm Pre, well, you got the Motorola. And for the Android, you got the Palm, you got the Garmin, all the different stocks. They're going to be on the website and we'll have some information there for you to check out. At thedisciplinedinvestor.com on the show notes. We'll put that little link on the top now so you can just go over to show notes and check it out. So I thought that would be great to put a little wrapper around this so you can have some stocks. We got to, of course, make this about investing here, and I thought we'd do so. Also, what we have is if you haven't visited the site this week, I really encourage you to do so. There was a really neat review and discussion of the payroll data as well as on the economy. Plus, we had just a whole host of things that we put up this week about China getting pretty pissed off at the United States and doing some things to say that we, in our financial industry in particular, have done some nasty things to them in terms of derivatives and lost in billions of dollars. And there was a good discussion of that. And I think that's something that you should check out. So do that. And when we get back next week, we're talking to Andrew Ross Sorkin. And we're also going to have a gentleman on, by the way, he is from the New York Times, and he wrote a great book about the whole entire debacle that happened back in 2008, 2009 with the banks, with Goldman, and an inside look, because he was there, he was reporting on it, he knew every step of the way what was going on, so we're going to have him talking about that. And we also have a gentleman back again who wrote a book about the origin and the growth of an inside look at the Federal Reserve. And he wrote a book, is Ed Griffin. He wrote a book that is entitled, aptly entitled, by the way, because this was talked about this week in the congressional hearings for Ben Bernanke, the Creature from Jekyll Island. And if you hadn't seen the video, I'm going to tell you, if you haven't seen this video where I think it was Senator Dunton or something. I guess it was Dunton. No, that's not right. Anyway, you got to look up the video grilling of Ben Bernanke by the senator. Just look on YouTube. You'll find it. I mean, boy, he took Bernanke apart. And I'll try to see if we can find that link as well and put it on there. But until next week, make sure to stay tuned. Make sure to have a great week. Invest right. Invest carefully with discipline. This is Andrew Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.